Next case is 1109, Disciplinary Counsel versus Monica Ann Henson, class. Mr. Williams.
Good morning. May it please the court, I am Kevin Williams for Relator. I'd like to begin by clarifying that we take no issue with the sanction that was recommended by the board in this matter. We're here only to object to the board's finding that there was no violation of DR-1-102A3, which is illegal conduct involving moral turpitude.
Mr. Williams, we've had a case like this some time ago where moral turpitude was the issue. Have we not defined moral turpitude satisfactorily to relators, the disciplinary counsel, in your opinion, or looks like we're still arguing about what it is?
I think the nature of moral turpitude and jurisprudence on that issue is such that it has always been difficult to define. It resembles the I know it when I see it obscenity definition. And as a result, the definition has always been somewhat imprecise. And if you're referring to Burkhardt's case in 1996, when this court said that we're going to take all of these on a case-by-case basis, that's very possibly what will happen in this case. We are arguing that a per se rule would be appropriate in matters of obstruction of justice. We believe that the elements of obstruction of justice are such that an attorney being convicted for that crime is simply inconsistent with finding that there was not moral turpitude. So we think that a per se rule is correct and that it would be reasonable for this court to adopt a per se rule with regard to obstructing justice. But if the rule is going to be the Burkhardt rule, that each case is taken individually, and considered individually, we believe that the facts of this case certainly warrant a finding that 1102A3 was violated. And I think that the nature of moral turpitude may well be such that a more specific definition is impossible, but given the definition that the court now uses, we think that these facts easily fit in to that definition. This court has said that the definition of moral turpitude as applied to attorneys is broad. It said that which constitutes moral turpitude for a lawyer is far different from that which constitutes moral turpitude for the layman. The lawyer, because of his training and position of public trust, must be held to a more strict standard than that of the layman. Professor Greenbaum, in his Lawyer's Guide to the Code of Professional Responsibility, observed that often illegal conduct involving moral turpitude involves conduct directed at the government, which inhibits the government's proper functioning. Obstruction of justice clearly falls into this category.
If we do that, counsel, sir, if we do that, and maybe that's what ought to be done, finding an A3 moral turpitude, obstructing justice is moral turpitude, a violation of A3. Can you think of any criminal action where one is convicted not being moral turpitude? Because that's the next step we'll be asked to take.
Any criminal conduct?
Uh-huh.
Yes, I think so.
Tell me one.
That would not be our argument.
Tell me one that you think.
Well, I can certainly point to the facts of Burkhardt. That was a case in which there was a theft. And that's the case that I earlier mentioned, in which the court stated that proof of criminal conviction is generally not conclusive on the issue of moral turpitude.
But that isn't the issue. The issue is not the criminal conviction. The issue is theft, which is clearly dishonest. Isn't that moral turpitude?
Exactly. And I think that if we were arguing that case, we would say theft is, but we can also see how the court decided that in that case, because the attorney, the respondent, believed, or at least there was evidence that she believed, that she did not actually take any money that she was not entitled to, that there was no moral turpitude. She believed that she was entitled to the money that she took from her employer because it was legitimate reimbursement for business expense.
Okay, now we have obstructing justice, we have theft, even petty, not even, but petty theft being moral turpitude. How about selling cocaine to children?
I think that selling cocaine to children would be
moral turpitude. So can we think of any criminal conviction?
Certainly.
That would...
Any traffic violation?
Well, excluding traffic violations.
I think that there may be...
Because traffic violation isn't a disciplinary offense usually anyway, is it?
No.
Okay, so we're bootstrapping a little there, maybe.
I think that there are other convictions besides traffic convictions that we would not, under the rule that we proposed, the first thing rule we proposed, consider to be moral turpitude, but...
I'm asking for just one.
Just one, besides traffic tickets. I would say...
Okay.
Possibly marijuana possession has already been considered to be a misdemeanor in the States, and more minor certainly than selling cocaine to children. Not that it isn't a crime, but I don't think that disciplinary counsel would take the position that a conviction for possession of small amounts of marijuana would be illegal conduct involving moral turpitude.
So that brings us back to a case-by-case determination, doesn't it?
Well, it might, and we can work within that framework, but we also propose that we can separate obstruction of justice because of the elements of obstruction of justice.
I understand.
From all other crimes. Obstruction of justice elements are a knowing attempt, first, second, with purpose to hinder the discovery, apprehension, prosecution, conviction, or punishment of another for a crime, and third, then warning the other of impending discovery or apprehension. We believe that any attorney who meets those elements has engaged in conduct that involves moral turpitude because of the attorney's special training and because of the attorney's position of public trust. That simply cannot be done without finding that there is moral turpitude. But we are more than willing to argue facts in this case. And in this case, the attorney called up her client when she got a hot tip that a big drug raid was about to take place in Worcester, Ohio. She called up a former client, no current case with the client, and told him that this raid was going to take. But she admitted...
She apparently told... That person apparently told others.
That's pain.
People, at least two of
his friends who were in the same
building. The names of whom we know, all of those people's houses were raided. No drugs were found in any of them.
You make the argument that in addition to thwarting the efforts of law enforcement in those specific instances, that it also could have put in danger the officers, because now the drug people know the officers are coming, and if they're the wrong kind of drug people, they might put the officers in danger. Would that be something we would, looking at your per se request, would that be something we would expect in every instance where there's obstruction of justice?
No, we wouldn't expect it in every case of obstruction of justice, but we would expect in every case of obstruction of justice an attorney warned a criminal or a potential criminal that the police or law enforcement officials were about to discover or apprehend him, and that in itself I think is bad enough. I would, however, argue, of course, that in this case the damage was extreme, severe, and potentially catastrophic. We all know, unfortunately, that proprietors of crack houses do not tend to be demure people, that they may have guns, they may have weapons, they may be willing to use them against police and others who threaten them, and that when this was a large-scale drug raid, maybe the largest that ever took place in Worcester, Ohio, 170 coordinated officers from the federal, state, and local law enforcement organizations, and every single one of those officers' life was placed in danger by this information being put out there. We know that Ms. Class informed her client to inform at least two other drug dealers. I think it's safe to assume that this news traveled like wildfire through the community of drug dealers in and around Worcester, Ohio, and that very many of the potential targets of the investigation were aware that the raid was about to take place, and that those officers' lives were all in very great danger.
You said you agree with the relator, you generally agree with the recommended sanction of 1 year with 6 months stay with probation and monitoring. Is this not a person who we would want to look at before we allowed her to return to the practice of law? This is, in my mind, this is a pretty serious act on her part. Very bad act. And I guess I wonder, so she's out for a year, but we'd bring her back in after 6 months. I guess I'm not terribly convinced that we don't need to have her go through the process that we do when we remove somebody indefinitely. You obviously thought that through because your position is to support the recommendation of the board.
We did think it through, and we considered it, and the crime was clearly very, very serious. The reason that we didn't support a more severe sanction is because her mitigation evidence was very, very good. That's what took place at the hearing. In fact, none of these facts are in dispute. All the facts were stipulated to. Exhibits containing all the rest of the facts that I mentioned were stipulated to. The hearing took place only for respondents to offer mitigation evidence, and she offered very good mitigation evidence. She had never been in trouble in any way before. She had very strong witnesses saying that she was trustworthy, and that this was anomalous behavior for her, that was clearly a serious mistake. But absolutely no one believed that she was likely to commit it again. She was able to convince the panel of that. Obviously, the panel found was so convinced of her generally good character, despite the seriousness of this crime, that it didn't even find a violation of 1-102A3. And I don't see how that's possible on the fact that the board didn't give any explanation in its opinion, but in the mitigation section, which does only go to sanction, it does not go to whether there was a violation or not. In the mitigation section of the opinion, the board stated that Ms. Glass, or her conduct, the board didn't believe was the result of malicious intent, but rather only the result of very poor judgment. That may well be the case. If it is, we would argue that doesn't change the fact that the conduct was so serious that a violation of 1-102A3 needs to be found in this case on these facts, even in the absence of a per se rule. And I think that the other case law that we cited supports that finding. I want to make it very clear that we know of no case. Respondents in this matter did not offer, and we know of no case in the state of Ohio where an attorney was convicted of obstructing justice or attempted obstructing justice, and there was not subsequently a finding of illegal conduct involving moral turpitude in the disciplinary proceeding. And we believe that the other cases that we cited involve conduct that although reprehensible, is less severe than the conduct in this case, at least with regard to the potential harm that was done to the police officer's safety.
Did you say, sir, there is no case that holds that, or there is no case that does not hold that?
There is no case that we know of that finds first a conviction of attempted obstruction
yes.
of justice or obstruction of justice, and then does not find
okay.
That was illegal conduct involving moral turpitude. All of them do find that it was illegal conduct involving moral turpitude. And the ones that we cited concern an attempt to fix traffic tickets in one of the cases, and in the other case, an attempt to bribe police officers to reduce a charge, which was originally a traffic charge, against the attorney's client. In that case, this court said two rights are more reprehensible under the facts of this case than the attempted bribery of a police officer. That's Cleveland Bar v. Italiano. We think that this conduct is more reprehensible. Attorney, whether she wishes her purpose or not, she was willing to put her clients in.
What is the sentence that she would like to see this court impose? What is the sanction?
The sanction? We asked for 6 months real time off. We believed that this attorney was not a serious threat. I don't think it would be unreasonable for the court to decide that she may be the sort of person who needs to review before she comes back in. I'm not saying that's unreasonable. It was a difficult call to
make. You don't want to stay at all today. You want to see 6 months?
No, absolutely. We want to see at least some real time off because, of course, there was a violation of 1-102-84. They're also dishonest. And we think that for the impression that this makes both on the public and Frank's attorneys, there needs to be real time off. Legal profession in the judicial system is increased and validated to some extent any time an attorney is convicted of engaging in obstructing justice or attempting to obstruct justice.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Oh, I'm sorry, your red light is not yet. Are you finished? You were finished.
He's finished.
The respondent has not filed a brief, and the case is submitted to be advised for appeal.